I'm Diana Artirian.
And help me with the title of your book.
Playing Monster Seiche.
Everything I learn from reading. I'm the queen of mispronunciation, so please correct me
if it's a very hard word, and I'm sorry.
Well, you explained it in one of the poems, though.
Yeah, it's like a Swiss French word. I feel very self-conscious about this title, and yeah, I mean every time I have a reading, I'm like, oh god. I think I've only had I also have a chapbook, Death Centos, which is a Latin word, versus cento, which is an Italian word and not a dead language. So people will always say cento, and I have to like be the asshole who explains. So I'm trying, and then it's funny because my next manuscript is called Agrippina the Younger, and it's about an ancient Roman historical figure. So I was like, that one won't be hard. And one of my friends was like, what are you talking about? Be Agrippina, like no one's gonna know how to say that.
Like, just call me and I'll tell you all the ways you can say it wrong.
Marginalia, notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
Diana Artirian is the Spring 2020 Emerging Visiting Poet at Wichita State University. She's also the author of a book-length poem, Playing Monster, Seiche. I recently caught up with Diana Artirian on the Wichita State campus and visited with her about her time here. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. You know, I want you to talk to me about the title a little bit. I understand that this is a combination of two collections.
Mm-hmm.
And what meaning does each title bring to the collection?
That's a great question. Well, I think it kind of shows the two threads that the work moves between, and kind of is meant to act as a guide for the reader to see where in the chronology of the speaker's life they are. So Playing Monster is referencing a really specific journal entry, because a lot of this book includes, kind of peppered throughout, journal entries from my mother from when I was very small. And in one of them, she talks about me playing monster and doesn't really go into further detail. And I think, to me, it evokes the fallout of sustaining an abusive situation as a kid and how trauma impacts how we grow up and how we try to cope and what our brains and bodies do to try to preserve us. So the way that I preserved myself was I learned to block feeling, and I didn't cry for a long time, and you know, thank goodness I'm not in that state anymore, but it was kind of the only way I could survive it. And then in terms of Seiche, that was at the end of a long Wikipedia wormhole. That collection was actually called The Lake Was Perfectly Calm, which was a line from a found text poem. And essentially the found text poems that still exist in this book are from late 1800s New York Times articles regarding a lake near where my mom lives. And that poem didn't make it. And it was all of these poems, essentially a lot of them had to do with drownings and deaths on the lake. And one of them was about a couple, I think, and someone just fell out of a boat and drowned. And someone was trying to keep their grip on her before she drowned, and she still drowned. And one of the lines was that the lake was perfectly calm. So this idea that it was this form that was able to enact violence despite it seeming placid felt important, considering the kind of, you know, I grew up in a middle-class, educated, white household. Both of my parents were academics, and I'm sure on the face of it, we seemed like a very successful and loving home, when underneath that, obviously, was a lot of violence and trauma. So Seiche, just because I was getting feedback that the lake was perfectly calm, isn't quite the feeling that the book was evoking. So Seiche is a Swiss-French word, specifically attempting to describe a really specific water phenomenon in which waves come, but they don't ever break and collapse. And so this kind of constant sense of dread, to me, is very deeply connected to that idea and how something is supposed to end a certain way. There's a certain narrative that we attribute to how a wave forms and stops existing. And I think that kind of keys into the larger ethos of this book, which is essentially, you know, with most trauma narratives, it's usually a kind of, and then the person got arrested, or, and then the family rode off into the sunset and never saw him again, or, and I still prevailed, or whatever narrative that makes us feel good, because the idea of survival feels good, as it should. But at the same time, abuse is much more complicated than that. And so the Seiche poems illustrate that abuse still finds you, in that my mom was dealing with a stalker and aggressive actions from random men, even after she was across the country from my father and long divorced. So, yeah.
Well, and so I was going to ask you, so your mother's diary was part of the Playing Monster collection, mm-hmm. and then the found text pieces were part of the Seiche collection. Mm-hmm. So the components of each just blended so seamlessly yeah. to create a narrative. When did you realize that the collections would work so well together?
It took me a really long time. It was really hard. I fought it for a really long time, and actually I had the supreme pleasure of having Maggie Nelson as my mentor during my MFA. If you don't know her work, I highly recommend it. She's incredible. And in my thesis defense, because I had started the Seiche book during my MFA as well, The Playing Monster was my thesis, and she said, you know, I think that these should be one book. And I thought, you know, no. And I wasn't ready. And then I was sending them out for publication, and nothing was really happening, and so I thought perhaps that they were just stories I needed to tell, and they didn't need to get published, which is fine, though a hard lesson to learn. But oftentimes work, even if it isn't something that the public ultimately has access to, it still feeds the larger arc of our work, right? And so I had other friends read it who work in publishing and who were poets I really admire, and they said, this should absolutely be one book. And it seems so obvious now because the tone is identical and the kind of story they tell together is so much more nuanced than the story they told separately. But it was funny because I was talking with a very dear friend of mine, kind of bellyaching about the idea of even doing it, making it into one book. And she said, well, you know what they say, if three people call you a horse, it's time to buy a saddle. And I was convinced. But there was a lot of grief in making it into one book. Kind of what I lost in the Seiche book in particular, because there was this whole thread about the pollution of this lake, which was extremely devastating, despite the lake being this incredible resource to the indigenous tribes there before white colonizers came, and then as a resource also to the white folks in that area. I mean, the salt in that lake, the men who worked to harvest the salt avoided conscription in the Civil War. It was such a huge resource for the Northeast for meat preservation, and they still just polluted it. To this day, it's still, I think it's a Superfund site. Hmm.
I read on LitHub a conversation between you and Natalie Albert titled Poetry Can Handle This, on Trauma and Radical Exposure. You said in that piece, quote, anyone with $17 in 2 hours can know a variety of truths my father worked very hard to keep from his social and professional world. Talk to me about exposing those truths.
That's a really good question. I'm trying to think of the best way to articulate this. I think being in a situation, especially as a child, when you in many ways are probably the most vulnerable you'll be in your whole life, hopefully, physically, but also emotionally. And being made to constantly realize how powerless you are daily, this illustrated to me that I wasn't, because I was keeping track. Whether I meant to or not, I think it was just how I survived, was paying attention. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't an act of vengeance. That's not really how the book feels to me. It's more of an illustration of how witnessing can be so empowering, even if it's not something you're able to fully engage with for, you know, 15 or 20 years. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just the idea that the truth will come out even if a long time passes. Yeah.
Would you be willing to read one of your poems?
Oh, absolutely.
I was thinking on page 40, long before he met my mother.
Sure. Long before he met my mother, my father went backpacking through Peru. One night he was nearly asleep on the ground when a meteor shower began to streak across the sky. He was terrified. He thought it was the rapture. Though both are law professors, she always drives us to piano lessons, cooks dinner each night. He says nothing about the meals. Thanks God for dinner.
There are how many poems in this collection?
Oh, it's long. I think it's like 160 pages, but they're so spare.
I asked you to read one that spoke to me, and I don't know if I chose that one because I felt like it encompassed, you know, a lot of, you know, the theme of the book, or if mm-hmm. it was speaking to me on some other level. Mm-hmm. But do you find that people bring a variety of poems to you and say, this one meant so much to me?
I think that I've had a lot of really, at times, trying responses to this book, particularly from people I know well. And I think I actually talked about it in that interview that you referenced. I had people write me and just list the pages that made them cry. And it made me reckon with what it is to make a piece of art that can be painful, which I'm really grateful for having that lesson early. I think I mostly get responses to the book as a whole, and which makes sense because it is kind of a book-length poem, even though they're discrete pieces through it. And, you know, the emails from people who I've never met saying that it meant something to them is the most meaningful responses I've gotten. And that it's helped them figure out how to write their own story or tell their own story means a lot.
The second narrative was about your mother's stalker.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on there? Because, you know, one, one section of this poem, one poem might give a description of what happens, which I might, you know, release an audible gasp.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very next page is a completely different scenario, and a completely different scenario the page
mm-hmm.
after that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me a little bit about that thread.
Okay, so this is at the end of the book. Yeah, I think that essentially this is a series of poems that are just describing my anxiety spinning out. Because just like the space phenomenon, there's no kind of culmination. There's no arrest. There's no attack. There's no kind of rupture with what was happening to my mom, other than just kind of feeling vulnerable, afraid, powerless. So yeah, I think it was just a way for me to explore all the wild places my mind was going in lieu of having something that felt conclusive in reality, because there was no real conclusion other than time just passing and nothing happening.
In that same Lit Hub piece that we talked about, you talked about considering who you want your audience to be, who you want to reach, and why. What answers did you come up with when you asked yourself those questions?
It felt really fraught for me for a while trying to publish this book. And I think what I ultimately decided with the help of others is that this book upends a lot of the stereotypes about where abuse happens and who perpetrates it. You know, I think the stereotypes are usually, it's in a poor household or an immigrant household or a household that's a family of color or an uneducated household or whatever. And this illustrates that it was none of those things. And so to me, I hope that my audience is, I hope that it can impact anyone who picks it up. But my greatest hope is that it illustrates that that's all not true and that abuse is far more prevalent in all different realms than we want to believe, and that privilege doesn't save you from it.
The dedication page reads, "For my family." And in the acknowledgments, you express gratitude to your mother, your brother, and sisters for answering all the difficult questions you needed to ask. Did you find that they remembered things differently than you did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've been extremely generous and supportive. I mean, I'm just the weird artist in the family, and they're so patient with me. And I think that that's true even in families with no trauma. You know, they often say that children feel like they were raised in different households. But I think trauma, too, makes memory very confusing. But I did ask them a lot of questions. You know, there are these kind of touchstones of our childhood together involving abuse and experiences. And so I would say, you know, how do you remember this? This is how I remember it. It's telling that for a lot of us, we don't really remember much. So for some of them, it was, I don't remember this at all. And others, it was, you know, didn't really feel like that to me, but that's not really what the book's about.
You know, writing the poetry is one thing. Is it difficult to talk about it with strangers like me after it's been published?
It's not difficult to talk to you.
Thank you.
I think because so much time passed between writing it and it coming out, it feels more settled to me. I do think that putting it in this kind of container of this book, it didn't lay anything to rest. I'm not gonna say that art does that. You need to do that as an artist with yourself and maybe a therapist. But it almost actually acts as a bridge to talk about these larger, far more complicated, yet really urgent topics involving abuse and the power that art can provide. So I think it's actually, it feels kind of empowering to be able to have us look at this thing together that doesn't really feel like you're casting a sharp eye on me, even though that's a lot of what the book is about. And it lets us kind of talk about the book and all of the issues that are attached to it in a way that feels comforting.
This book is not labeled poetry on the cover.
Oh, that's true.
But, you know, the white spaces and the sentence structure as you flip through the pages would suggest otherwise. You know, how does one clear that mental obstacle for readers? How do we communicate that this is a story, that there is a through line, and that this is, in fact, a page turner and not a collection of a poem here and a poem there?
Right. It's not a particularly conventional collection of poems. I don't know that it does. I mean, I guess if you go through just the table of contents or look at the blurbs, I mean, books are such interesting machines, or I guess forms of technology, in that I can't dictate how somebody interacts with this. They could read it backwards. But I think that if they were to read even in the middle three in a row, or something, it would be clear that there was a narrative. And this has been taught in memoir classes, which is interesting. Because in a way it's a memoir, but it's also a book-length poem, and they're also discrete poems that feel like they can live on their own. But yeah, it's really up to the reader.
Do you have a poem you'd like to read?
Sure.
Another one?
Yeah. This is from the Seish section. the puh of something catching, flame sounds, flags in quick wind, whatever is caught, untwists, cracks open further, tiny red fingers combing through the embers, and what of what stays locked shut. This is from a series of poems that kind of investigates fire as another element that we touch on as we go through the book.
Talk to me a little bit more about that poem.
It was funny. When I was editing these books together, I was at this really beautiful residency in the Deschutes National Forest in Oregon, and I was living in an A-frame for a month, and I had a fireplace that I was maintaining to keep warm, and so I was burning a lot of drafts and doing other nerdy poetic things, and so a lot of I found myself doing almost every day was just kind of watching fire and making sure it was catching and doing all that stuff. And so it's kind of this trippy description of what it is when fire catches and how flames can sound like flags whipping in the wind, and just watching how embers light, how things kind of open in fire, but that there are still things that don't open entirely, which feels like a larger point about the book.
Does this poem have a particular structure to it?
There are a series of poems in here that are maybe the most obviously poetic compared to the others, which feel like reportage. They're extremely spare. And also, I should say, the ones that are very spare for the most part are, I think all of the Sage poems are in couplets, and all of the Playing Monster poems are, you know, use space, but the lines aren't very long. And then this series of poems, they almost look like clouds to me, which was actually the suggestion of my peers in a workshop when we were workshopping this manuscript during my PhD. And so I kind of was trying to figure out how to operate in another mode to give the reader something other than the very spare kind of witness testimony vibe that the rest of the book has, and also kind of giving fire and water a place to play together in a single book, and how they both can be means for understanding the philosophy of what was happening.
You get such a thoughtful answer.
You do. I had to think about it for a while.
So talk to me about what you're doing at Wichita State. You're the emerging visiting poet. What does that involve?
It's involved so much for me. I think above all, the supreme joy of working with the students here. It's been such a pleasure to get to know them and their work. So I've been meeting with each of them one-on-one, talking about their poems, talking about their goals, close reading poems that they love together. A lot of it has been me kind of mining my own library and making suggestions, giving all of them kind of wildly scribbled book titles on pages to read. But above that, I've just been trying to make the absolute most use of this office and treating it like a residency. I've been clocking in over 40 hours a week here, just working on other projects. I have a memoir I've been trying to formulate, and I feel like it's starting to finally take shape this week, which is great. Such a relief, because it's very terrifying. And then also writing, just starting to kind of dip my toes into the next series of poems. And both of those projects have to do with issues of illness in the body and, you know, kind of the fallout of what this book provides chronology for, just gives narrative to, is how trauma can impact the body later. So I have chronic pain, though it's very well managed. And so both the memoir and the book of poems is kind of an exploration of the body and what it holds as a means of protection, but then catches up with you later most of the time.
That was Diana Artarian, author of the book Playing Monster, Seiche, which was published by 1913 Press. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover more episodes at kmuw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. This episode of Marginalia was recorded on the campus of Wichita State University. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editor is Luann Stevens, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.